Good morning, Council. I'm going to ask our Marshal Bethany Anderson to call court to order.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Werke, Judge Flory, and Judge Bryan. The Honorable Renee L. Werke presiding.
Good morning again, and thank you for appearing on our video platform. It seems as if this has been going on, obviously, more than a year and a half, but we appreciate everyone's cooperation in trying to dispose of our caseload in this fashion. Today, October 6th, we do have four matters set for oral presentation as well as non-oral cases that will be on our agenda. I want to remind you that if you're not speaking, to please mute your microphone. Each of you will have 15 minutes to argue your points. There's a clock that's up in at least my upper left-hand corner that should be visible to each of you. Appellate counsel, you will also have 5 minutes for rebuttal of your argument. With that said, I'll ask our marshal to call the first case for consideration.
Our first case is number A21-0850 in the matter of the civil commitment of Jackie Barrett.
Mr. Anderson, when you're ready to proceed, you have the floor. You remain muted.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. May it please the court, my name is Kurt Anderson. I represent the appellant Jackie Barrett in this appeal from Hennepin County Commitment and Forced Medication, so-called Jarvis orders. In this appeal, Ms. Barrett focuses on a commitment order, and in particular, whether the order is supported by clear and convincing evidence. This court reviews de novo whether there is clear and convincing evidence to support Ms. Barrett's commitment. The doctors and the court examiner agree that Ms. Barrett has a mental illness. Therefore, the question on this appeal is whether Ms. Barrett's behavior demonstrated, quote unquote, in the words of the statute, and again quoting, a substantial likelihood of physical harm to self or others. This commitment, Your Honors, is based on a very thin set of concrete behavioral facts. First, Ms. Barrett was found sleeping in her car at around 2 o'clock a.m. with her infant son in her lap. The baby had a soiled diaper. The car's engine was not running, and there was no report of unfavorable weather conditions. Second, when a police officer knocked on her car window, Ms. Barrett acted confused. Third, Ms. Barrett verbally, not physically, but verbally resisted being brought to a hospital. At the hospital, she also verbally resisted her confinement and treatment. Finally, fourth, in the course of her argument with the police, Ms. Barrett said she, quote unquote, wanted to drive into a brick wall. Now, under the clear and convincing standard of proof, Ms. Barrett is entitled to the benefit of all reasonable inferences. In other words, if there has to be an extrapolation from the above small set of concrete facts, the extrapolation has to go her way, not the hospital petitioner's way. All of the following inferences are reasonable and negate rather than demonstrate the possibility of substantial harm. First of all, sleeping in a car with an infant may or may not demonstrate bad judgment, but does not demonstrate a substantial threat of harm to Ms. Barrett or her infant son. Second, there is nothing unusual about an infant soiling its diaper during sleep. Third, people are initially confused when awakened by others, and particularly so if it involves an unusual noise, as in this case when someone knocks on a car window. Fourth, being verbally argumentative does not threaten substantial physical harm, unless there is a specific threat of substantial physical harm. I cited the Grabowska case in my brief on that. Fifth, and finally, Ms. Barrett saying she quote unquote wanted to drive into a brick wall does not express an intention to do so. There is no context of violent behavior or any other indicator of an actual intention to harm herself or others. A threat cannot exist unless the circumstances unequivocally point to an intention by Ms. Barrett to threaten harm to herself or others. There are no such circumstances. In summary, there is no there. The record is full of equivocation and speculation, but lacks the clear and convincing behavioral evidence that would support a commitment. As I indicated in our briefs, reversing the commitment order also requires reversing the Jarvis order.
Now I get to interrupt you. I've been unfortunately muted and couldn't unmute myself. I had to contact our our host as far as that rule and how it got set up. So here's what I want to say. All right.
Sure.
One of the problems I have with your argument as well as your briefing, Mr. Anderson, is that you're challenging air quotes the hearsay reports that Judge Crothers relied on in making this opinion. Are you broadly just saying all of the reports, the medical reports, the police reports? Do you have specificity as far as which reports you're taking issue with? Because, you know, clearly it's hard for us to ferret out which reports you consider to be in violation of the rule and which not.
Sure. Well, first of all, I have challenged your Williams decision in previous cases. It's not an issue in this case. I'm taking all those reports at face value. I'm gleaning out every possible concrete fact that I can out of those reports that may support a finding of harm. And out of those reports are the four or five factors I just listed. In other words, I'm challenging none of the above. I'm relying on all of the above. And that's all I can glean in the way of concrete facts.
So all of the, what I'm hearing you argue then is that despite all of the reports, if we're resolving this in favor of your client, that there is not sufficient record evidence to support her commitment. Is that what you're saying? That even if we did, we look at the reports, we look at the information, that it just doesn't meet up the challenge as you posed?
That is exactly correct. It simply does not add up to clear and convincing evidence of a substantial threat of harm. Does not demonstrate it, circling back to the main statutory language.
Mr. Anderson, if I could maybe have you pinpoint a little bit more for us. So I understand the argument that you're making about sufficiency, and I'd like to put that aside for a minute. Are you also, apart from that argument, are you asserting that the district court committed error regarding hearsay, or reliance on inadmissible hearsay, I should say?
In this case, Your Honor, no. There would be other cases where I would consider your Williams decision to be.
I just want to know what the errors are that you're asserting. I understand you're saying there's error in the ultimate conclusion based on this record, and whether the record's sufficient to support it. Mm-hmm. But it did seem that there was an argument, or maybe that's why I'm putting you on the spot here. Are you asserting that the district court erred in relying on inadmissible hearsay or not? Because if you are, then we have to address that. And if you're not, then we can just put that aside. And I would appreciate if you're not making that assertion of error, that you tell us so that we can address the issues that you're presenting. Are you saying the district court erred in relying on inadmissible hearsay?
In a word, no.
Okay, thank you.
The argument is that in order to constitute clear and convincing evidence, the glass has to be 3/4 full. In this case, the glass is about 1/4 full. That's the argument.
All right. So here's another question for you then. And of course, if we're looking at whether, in fact, she would pose a substantial risk of harm to herself or others, Judge Crothers in this matter said that she was not credible when she tried to dispute, I shouldn't say tried to dispute, that goes to the weight of the evidence. When she testified that she was tired, didn't want to drive, unaware of the feces and so on, what do we do with that credibility determination? Because if she did, in fact, want to drive her car into a wall, that would present a danger to herself as well as the baby that was in her arms.
That's correct, Your Honor. The judge did make that finding of lack of credibility. I would challenge the petitioner's case on that and say, hypothetically, throw out all of that testimony. The judge didn't tell us what specifically was not credible. Let's assume for the sake of argument that he found none of it credible. The appellant here has to prove nothing in this case. If you throw out all of that testimony, you still have nothing. You have no history of dangerous behavior that indicates that quote unquote wanting, and that is a quote, judge did accept that, quote unquote wanting to drive your car into the brick wall is the same as an intention to do it. There's no history of any kind of violent behavior at all in this case. So even without her testimony, this has to be presumptively taken, because she's entitled to that presumption, as a rhetorical statement. And unless you can point to something else that turns that statement into an actual threat of physical harm, the threat is simply not there. Somebody's muted.
We're muted, but I don't think we have any questions. None are coming your way.
Okay, thank you very much.
We still have time left, but if you forfeit that time, that's clearly your opportunity to make that decision, as well as your rebuttal time is preserved.
I had anticipated a 3-minute oral argument, Your Honor, and I am finished.
All right, with that said, then we will turn it over to respondent counsel.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. And Sarah Elasky from the Hennepin County Attorney's Office on behalf of Hennepin County. May it please the court. Jackie Barrett is a person who posed a risk of harm due to her mental illness. This past May, after review of hundreds of pages of records, the testimony of the court-appointed psychologist, as well as the testimony of Ms. Barrett, the Hennepin County District Court, Judge Crothers, properly opined that Ms. Barrett met the criteria for civil commitment. The appellant argues the
same. How was she going to harm herself or others? Because she said she would apparently reported that she was going to drive her car into a wall. Is that the sole criteria? I mean, clearly people are homeless. They may live in their car. You sleep in your car. And, you know, for safety's sake, maybe she was wise not to be driving if she was tired and had a child.
She was wise to not be driving at that particular hour at 2 a.m. However, Your Honor, the danger in this particular case that the court found regarding that statement as a threat, you have to look at the circumstances surrounding that statement. It's 2 a.m. She's already had evidence by the first responders that responded to the scene that she was disoriented, she became frustrated, she was agitated. And so appellant chalks that statement up to as mood of frustration and not being an intended threat. However, you have to know your audience. And in this particular case, it was first responders. It was a police officer who observed her with a young child, an infant on her lap, who was soiled. And it turned out that the infant had not just a dirty diaper, but had sores on his bottom and that he was not being properly nourished. So taking the first responder who responded to that situation, taking that all those circumstances and including this woman who is getting more and more agitated into account, that threat, I want to drive into a brick wall, is taken seriously. And that first responder had other information prior to that, and that is in the court's order about a concerned friend who was concerned about her living in her car and her mental health. Ms. Barrett admitted in testimony that she had previously been committed back in 2018. And so there were concerns about her mental health at that particular time. So you have to take the circumstances into account. She wasn't at a cocktail party just talking with friends about, you know, the trials and tribulations of having a newborn. She was sitting in her car at 2 a.m. with an infant on her lap. And when first asked about this particular infant, denied that the infant existed until she was brought back into the moment. So even if the statement was a passing frustration, the conversation was occurring with first responders, and you do have to know your audience. Ms. Barrett's behavior during this encounter was even more cause for concern because she was confused, she was disoriented, she was unable to answer some questions, she was getting more and more agitated and uncooperative. Appellant states that there no assault occurred, that there's this history of violent behavior. In civil commitment cases, you don't have to wait for murder and mayhem to occur. You don't have to wait for someone to actually drive themselves into a brick wall. You can have that concern. Civil commitment is for a court order for treatment, and it's for a limited period of time. It's for a 6-month duration. It's not for, you know, an extent. This, we're not talking about someone who's mentally ill and dangerous where it's an indefinite commitment, or indeterminate commitment. We are talking about someone who needs court order for treatment. Appellant concedes that we don't have to discuss whether or not she suffers from a substantial psychiatric disorder. That was found by the court. That was found by the court psychologist. And even though Ms. Barrett denied in her testimony that she suffered from a mental illness. There is documentation, ample documentation in the medical records and the court records that she does suffer from that substantial psychiatric disorder. So in terms of where she was in this particular moment, there was ample concern for those first responders to bring her to the hospital. And while at the hospital, the agitation continued, and she was not just confused, she was agitated. She continued to have limited insight into her mental illness, her need for medication. Eventually, she did begin to start taking some medications prior to the trial for this particular case, and her symptoms of her mental illness started to abate. And that is because at the time that this was happening, she was suffering from an untreated mental illness. So in terms of appellant argued in his brief that inappropriate behavior is not committable behavior, and loss of liberty through commitment calls for a showing that the individual suffers from something more serious than demonstrated by idiosyncratic behavior. Ms. Barrett's behavior was not just simply idiosyncratic or peculiar. She was suffering from that untreated mental illness. And I want to go back to, in terms of the standard of review, I know that Mr. Anderson did state that he's not discussing Williams or not challenging Williams in this particular case, but the standard of review that is quoted in the briefs talks about he cites the Kavanaugh v. the Golden Rule case back from 1948, where it says that there has to be unequivocal and uncontradicted evidence. And if you look at the dictionary definition of unequivocal, it means that they're in a way that leaves no doubt. And that sounds closer to a beyond a reasonable doubt standard, and that not clear and convincing. As Mr. Anderson stated that, you know, the glass has to be three quarters full. You're talking about unequivocal and uncontradicted, that sounds more like completely full, like a criminal definition or a criminal standard. But we are looking at clear and convincing. And in terms of the evidence that Judge Carruthers had to look at, the child protection records, the medical records, as well as the child protection and medical records, there was sufficient evidence within those records to state that there was this harm, that she, of course, suffered from that substantial psychiatric disorder, but that she also posed a risk of harm to not only herself, but to that child that was in the car with her. As indicated earlier, the malnourished, the feces on his body, the sores, or the feces all over the car, the sores, at that point, a harm to her child. And it wasn't discussed here in oral argument, however.
That's more of a CHIPS thing than a mental illness thing, wouldn't it be?
And that's exactly what I was going to go into. It wasn't discussed here in oral argument, but yes, of course, it is a CHIPS thing. However, if you do look at the Olson case, that is an unpublished case that was cited, there is, just because she was suffering from that acute mental illness, just because she wasn't taking care of his needs at the time. Yes, absolutely, CHIPS should get involved, and they did get involved, but that doesn't negate the fact that she still had the psychiatric disorder that was a harm to her son at the time. And for that, she did meet the criteria for civil commitment regarding a recent attempt or threat to physically harm selves or others, as stated in the Minnesota Statute 253B.02 subdivision 17A paren 3. So in terms of based on the totality of the circumstances in this case, there was more than sufficient harm that she be brought to that hospital. And it continued while her behaviors continued while at the hospital. So in civil commitment, the question of dangerousness is a factual determination for the trial court to determine, and it should not be disturbed on appeal unless it's clearly erroneous. That's cited an In re Hoffmaster, which is a Minnesota Court of Appeals case from 1989. You don't have to wait, as I indicated, for that murder or mayhem. Her indication that she wants to drive into a brick wall is a sufficient threat that with someone who already has a history of mental illness, someone who at the time is very agitated, to take seriously. We don't have to wait for her to move in, to drive into that brick wall, for us, for civil commitment to get involved, for court-ordered treatment to be involved in her care. So in this particular case, the trial court, who observed Ms. Barrett, who heard her testify, who deemed her not to be a reliable historian or credible, the court was not erroneous in its findings that she was that she had a substantial psychiatric disorder and posed a threat to herself as well as to others. So at this point, respondent is requesting that this panel uphold the district court's decision and affirm its decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson, you have the last word. You're muted yet.
Thank you very much. Four quick points for the court. First of all, the first responder reaction is not the equivalent to commitment criteria. If the first responder feels that somebody needs to be taken to a hospital for evaluation, that does not mean that that person has met the criteria for commitment. So the fact that the first responders felt they needed to intervene does not prove a case for commitment. Secondly, the verbiage that is undisputed in this case, want to drive my car into a brick wall, is not the same as I will or I intend to. It simply does not equate. Thirdly, and now I begin to understand why the court had the question about the hearsay. There are numerous instances in the civil commitment order that Judge Carruthers did where he basically just says it was reported this, it was reported that. It does not say in those contexts, the court hereby finds that. In other words, merely repeating some previous report without stating whether the court credits that report or gives it any weight simply does not add up to a finding. There was some report of something happened earlier. Well, okay, Judge, what do you think about it? He doesn't tell us. And that may have been where the issue came up regarding the Williams issue. Finally, I think this is probably, hopefully, the universal truth about civil commitments and other good intention interventions. Good intentions are no substitute for due process of law. So people can run away screaming from everybody's good intentions. They do not have, they're not obligated to have their liberty abridged unless the actual due process of law occurs. The due process is written into the statute. The criteria do have to be met. They have to be met by clear and convincing evidence. And once again, I respectfully submit to the court, the glass is only one quarter full here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Thank you to both parties. It's an interesting case, and the matters were well briefed as well as argued today. The decision will be forthcoming within the statutory timeframe. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.